When Michael Browning first encountered AC/DC 40 years ago, can you believe it? He'd already had years of experience in the rock industry here in Australia, dating from the mid-60s. In fact, he was part of the beginning of the rock industry here in Australia. Just out of his teens, he'd opened up one of our first discotheques. It was called Sebastian's Penthouse at St Kilda Beach. It was actually a penthouse he and his mate were living in. He went on to run his own booking agency, and then he took on the job managing legends like Doug Parkinson, Billy Thorpe and the Aztecs. But his big ambition was to be the first to take an Australian band and make them worldwide stars. In 74, he asked his mate Chuggy, Michael Chugg, if he knew anyone in Sydney who might be good at pumping out hard rock. He heard AC/DC's Malcolm and Angus Young in action for the first time, and poignantly enough, with confirmation last week that Malcolm has dementia and will no longer tour, Michael has now released his memoir. It's called Dog Eat Dog, covering his time as the band's manager, as well as his associations with other great Australian acts, including INXS and Noiseworks. And Michael Browning joins me in the breakfast studios now. Malcolm, welcome to breakfast. Michael, welcome to breakfast.
Thank you.
Before we get to your AC/DC years, I mean, I was really captured by your telling of the birth of the Australian rock scene, really, particularly in Melbourne, the late 60s, the early 70s. You were setting up the first nightclubs, booking bands. These were incredibly exciting times, and there was no rule book. You were just making it up, running the first club from your own flat, in a sense.
Pretty much. Yeah, Melbourne was a very exciting place to be in back in the mid-60s, but mid to late 60s. It was pretty much the music rock and roll capital of Australia at the time, and bands gravitated there from all over the country and from New Zealand, and that's pretty much where most of the music was coming from in that period.
And these, when you read your book, you're struck by the names. Still, some of the biggest names in Australian rock and roll were from back then. Mm. Doug Parkinson. Now, sure, kids around today might not know them, but once they listened to Doug Parkinson, they would love him because his voice was incredible. Mm. But the Loved Ones, Jerry Humphries. I mean, they were a great band. Oh. Masters Apprentices, the Easy Beats, Kevin Borich. They were all back from your time.
They were.
You gave them some of their first gigs.
Yeah, absolutely. The Loved Ones were one of my favourites.
Top band.
Oh, just Jerry Humphries is just one of the greatest front men we've ever had. I later in life actually got INXS to record The Loved One. Yeah, I was such a big fan.
And there was also the birth of the TV rock and roll show Commotion was on every night.
Commotion, yeah, Commotion. That was a funny concept where everyone, including Molly Meldrum, used to get up and mime to all the latest records, and all of the stars on the show became actually bigger stars than the original artist.
They were wild times. Yeah. You live to tell the tale. In 1975, almost 40 years ago exactly, tell us your first impression when you met the Young Brothers, Angus and Malcolm.
Yeah, well, they came and played for me at my club in Melbourne called the Hard Rock Cafe, and I made a point of making sure I was there to catch their performance. And when they arrived, I couldn't believe what I saw. There was a schoolboy with a satchel on his back, with a cigarette hanging out the corner of his mouth, and his brother Malcolm, who at the time was into this sort of glam thing, and he was dressed up what can only be described as a jockey that, you know, sort of just looked like he was, you know, turned up to ride in the Melbourne Cup. And I thought to myself, this, you know, Michael Chugg made the recommendation, a friend of mine, a well-known promoter, and I couldn't believe that he'd made the recommendation. But as soon as they started playing, it was just a whole new different thing. The fabulous guitar intros that Malcolm has become famous for kicked in, and then Angus, you know, kicked in over the top of that, and it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, as you say in the book, you thought to yourself, if these guys can play, well, they'll be great, and they could play, and
that could.
The sort of special thing that brothers can have sometimes when they're playing guitars together. We saw it in the Sonny Boys too. Your aim was to get them overseas, but you point out in the book that by the time AC/DC really cracked it in the US, they'd done literally 1,000 gigs, so they worked incredibly hard. This wasn't just fly-by-night success, was it? What was it about AC/DC that the world loved?
Well, I think it was just their commitment to their performance. I mean, Angus is one of the rare artists that just gives 100% every time he steps on the stage, and he just gives of himself, and I think people appreciate that. They're entertaining. Bon was a very entertaining singer, and as you said, they did the approach that I took was that we just had to put them in front of an audience, because they were never ever going to be the darlings of the media, particularly in London.
Well, you were right, and you got them there, and they did make it big. And then, you're right, how they sacked you. Just before the death of Bon Scott in 1980, the book's title is Dog Eat Dog, and you describe how the Young Brothers sacked you and then were uncompromising once you're on the outer. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, that was just pretty much the nature of the beast. I mean, you know, it was, you know, they're Scottish. There's somewhat of a clan mentality there, and their ambition was to become the biggest rock band in the world, and nothing was going to get in their way, and anyone that, you know, sort of outlived their use by date was disposed of, and that's how it was, and probably that's how it should be if you want to achieve that level of success.
And does it still sting that happened to you?
Not at all, no. No, I say that in all honesty, because I was, it was very stressful. It was a very stressful gig in the end. I mean, they were very demanding, and I think I was smoking about 2 packets of cigarettes today, and every time the phone would ring, I'd light up, and I quite honestly believe that I wouldn't be here today, you know, if it hadn't turned out that way.
Well, not only did you survive AC/DC and live to tell a tale, you also went on to sign INXS, so that's a good day's work too. Michael, thank you so much for coming in. It's really great to meet you. This book is a terrific read, and I really think before we go we should hear a little bit of Akka Dakka. Let's have a listen.
Thank you.
AC/DC on that long road to the top, and they eventually made it. Michael Browning, Dog Eat Dog, his story of survival, struggle and triumph by the man who put AC/DC on the world stage, is published by Allen Unwin. Thanks very much, Michael.